Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Jason, I find it interesting that on the second to last SmackDown, the last SmackDown before WrestleMania weekend, we got no fresh hype for either of the men's world title matches. WWE replayed the beatdown from Rock and Cody on Raw, which was good that they did that. But this show is going to be remembered for, and sort of the scene cleared for this to be the major item coming out of the show, which is the first full-fledged, well-rounded introduction of Jade Cargill to the landscape of SmackDown. What do you think about that decision? And did you think Jade made a big splash and felt like a big enough deal to make up for the fact that there was no Roman or Cody, or for that matter, Seth or Drew or Rock Talk, anything fresh tonight?
Personally, Wade, I liked it. And you can tell WWE obviously think very highly of Jade. They give her that segment where she signs the contract with Nick Aldis, and then she's at the end helping out Bianca Belair and Naomi. The final scene of the three of them standing together, which obviously is a very cool scene for a lot of people, to see three black women together like that dominating. And, you know, obviously it's going to set up a six-women tag match with Damage Control, Bianca, Naomi, and Jade together. So, Wade, I see what you're saying. I liked it. I think what WWE wanted to do was give what happened on Monday a bit of time to breathe. Yep. I think that was such a monumental segment on Monday that they just wanted to recap it a little bit. And then I think what they tried to do, because some of the criticism that people are having is that The Rock is taking over from Roman Reigns, and now it's more like it's Rock versus Cody. And you had Paul Heyman talk about that this was the order of the Tribal Chief. Let's be honest, this suits Roman Reigns' character. He has proven himself to be and shown himself to be a very calculating type of champion. We've seen backstage, he's always thinking about things, so it's not going beyond his character to say that he would have ordered this for The Rock actually beat up Cody. So I think they wanted to tie that loose end up. People are thinking maybe Rock is overshadowing Roman. But to me, Wade, I can justify that Roman knows he has a very strong, strong person in his corner in Rock, and he's going to use him to his advantage in order to maintain his grip on the title. But like I said, in relation to tonight, give it time to breathe. We had a monumental Raw, and to introduce Jade, make her a big deal, have her standing next to Naomi, and in particular Bianca Belair, so you see the two of them together, which is going to lead to something further down the track. I like what they did.
Yeah, I asked the question and I tried to be objective about it, not tip my hand too much. I think it was brave, but I think it was a wise decision. And I think the key phrase that you said, kind of mouthing along as you said it, is giving that real hardcore bloody beatdown by Rock Cody a chance to breathe. And it is a key thing to add that they said Rock did that on orders of the Tribal Chief. And that does address that issue of who's really leading. Is Rock calling himself the final boss is he trying to send a signal that, yeah, there's the Tribal Chief, but the next level up is the final boss or not? And I have no reason to doubt that I don't think they're going to play off that, like, Rock, you didn't tell me to do that. It was my idea. I mean, I just think this was a way for them to introduce into the storyline that Roman is calling the shots. And it just that phrase or making that statement does sort of reshuffle and recalibrate and rearrange like our image of the hierarchy going into WrestleMania. It says that Rock carried out some orders from Roman, and Roman has a self-interest in it because Roman wants to keep his title. He wants Cody to be weak, and he has shown no hesitation to utilize members of the Bloodline to help him retain his title, either during matches or beforehand. So this worked for me. You know, I mean, Cody said on Monday we're in the final 2 weeks and the Wake's in the barn or whatever he said, and, you know, like, almost kind of was apologizing for there being filler. I think Jay was a really good card to play 1 week before WrestleMania weekend, because it does feel like she's a big deal, they, thanks to the job they did, but also her inherent presence. And so this show had a hook, a newsworthy hook that didn't involve belaboring the point or just having, you know, Paul Heyman stand in the ring and gloat over what Rock did in an in-ring promo, which they could have done, and it might have been masterful. But I think this felt like a newsworthy show, and it was, I think, beneficial to Jade that she was the focus. I mean, it was an ensemble show in certain ways, but, you know, we had Logan Paul show up, and we had big title matches, and we had Rey Mysterio issue a challenge. I mean, there's newsworthy things that happened, but Jade showing up at the end and the in-ring segment earlier really did establish who she is, what she stands for, what her personality is for people who haven't seen much or any of her before, and we know who she's against and who she's aligned with, at least her common enemies. Tell me what you thought more, Jason, of the presentation of Jade. Was there anything you especially liked or anything you're second-guessing about her tone, her pace, her look, and how she was booked?
I think it was short, sharp, and to the point. And that's what you want to do with her, because what she has that a lot of wrestlers don't have, I mean, she just has this amazing look. So you can't help but look at her. I mean, Wade Barrett, you know, went a bit overboard with it, obviously, but she has a striking presence to her. So when you have someone look like this, you've got to make everything they do count. And the fact of the matter is that when she came out there, she took out Damage Control by herself after they beat down Naomi and Bianca. So obviously, the money match down the line, and this could be a future WrestleMania matchup, is going to be Jade Cargill versus Bianca Belair. So they position, obviously, Jade as a babyface. We want her standing with Bianca. You know, they want that image there. They want her with Naomi. But eventually, we're going to get to that match. But you've got to remember, Wade, look, WWE, AEW, they are in the position to tell us what they want us to think is important. They are the masters of their own universe. So if they go out of their way to tell us that this person is important and frame them in a certain way and set them up for segments, we're going to believe that they're important to them. And they have made us think that Jade Cargill is very important. And yes, we've waited a long time for her to actually debut and actually do something in the ring, with the exception of the Royal Rumble, of course, but as far as either SmackDown or Raw, and I think it's worth it. Damage Control, we're taking over. We've seen that they've taken over the show for the past 2 years. Cargill comes in, completely decimates them. Now it's going to happen. And I also thought, in relation to Damage Control, I like the promo that Sky cut against Bayley, because she presented her own point of view, Bayley as a selfish person, was using them, you know, that she had her own reasons for it. But then I like the way they cleverly said that, EO said, and saw through the subtitles, that the fans discussed her for going along with Bayley. So he signed it back at the fans for going along with Bayley. So I thought that was a very good promo by EO. It established her as more of a heel, more of a sinister type of heel too, even though she gave her explanation as to why she's thinking that way, because I think she's sort of been lacking a bit of heat, and I think that put a bit more on her as a heel and gave reason for Bayley to attack her. And of course, the crowd were chanting for Bayley tonight to come and save Bianca and Naomi, but to have Jade Cargill come out, I think that's more than a suitable replacement, and I like the way that they've set things up. So in my mind, Wade, and I'm always someone who looks at things as a glass half full, but I think they did a wonderful job with Jade, and she definitely looks the part, and she definitely belongs in the ring.
Yeah, I think it's a good point that, you know, she's making this case. A lot of fans were thinking exactly what she was saying during Damage Control's run, that it was selfish and a glory hog and using other people. And so she speaks the truth, but you don't want that to become a babyface promo. So you have her say, the fans discuss me for now siding with Bayley. So it was an important thing to add to the promo, just from a psychological cadence standpoint, to pull people in and go, well, you know, maybe she's making some good point. Oh, wait, she thinks I'm disgusting and then also people are going to be defensive in their own mind, whether they think it through or sort of manifest an emotion, which is, I want to give Bayley a second chance. And she seems like she has changed. And you guys were all mean to her and talking behind her back, all those emotions and thoughts come back, and boom, you're set up for fans wanting Bayley to get revenge. But they have set up, and you know, the announcers really emphasized at the end that the women's division, whatever we thought we knew, Wade Barrett said, has changed. Everything we thought we knew about the women's division was just rewritten, was the exact quote. And Corey Graves backed that up and said, Damage Control have a whole new problem. The lay of the land going into and now coming out of WrestleMania is really interesting because you have a solid group with Damage Control as heels. So Dakota is the top spokesperson. This guy's a top champ. Asuka, very credible. Kairi Sane, her partner, credible. But you now have Bianca and Naomi, who have a little bit of a dispute over Bayley, and now Jade Cargill added to the mix. You have sort of four-on-four right now, four against four, which can manifest in different ways and matchups at WrestleMania and beyond. But at some point, because it's pro wrestling, that someone on the babyface side is going to turn. And who that is, when it happens, against whom, and what matches result is interesting, but it is, I mean, I don't think Barrett's overstating it when, you know, kind of color commentator character is prompted to, or on his own said, that everything we thought we knew has been rewritten. I mean, it's a bit of an overstatement. I mean, a lot of what we knew is still there, but Jade does create this whole new gravitational force. And you know, I mean, she looked like a star in every way. That outfit she wore at the end, like, where it just looked like she's covered as modestly as necessary to be on Fox with broken glass, basically clinging to her. Well, it was amazing. You know, I mean, it's just a top shelf outfit, and obviously, you know, she exudes confidence. The actors really made a big deal. You know, made an effort to point out that she was in no hurry. You know, she's walking to the ring deliberately, but she's so intimidating. Damage Control just stopped and stared at her, waiting for her to come out of the ring. So, yeah, I just give a real strong positive reaction. I mean, when we look at EW introducing Ospreay and Okada and Mercedes Moné, they've done a good job with all three. But the Jade Cargill introduction, to immediately have her in the mix with top names, I think one-ups what AEW did with Mercedes, which is, well, I have an issue with Willow over something sort of petty that I probably shouldn't have an issue with her for. It was just an injury in the midst of a competitive match where people try to hurt each other. And it's sort of a little bit messy beyond that. Jade, it's just crystal clear right now what's going on, who the heels are and who she's aligning with. So WWE did a really good job here, Jason.
Yeah, I like what you said. It's crystal clear. I mean, with AEW, with Mercedes and Willow, people love Willow. You know, she's so likable. To have her sort of half feuding with Mercedes straight away, you're sort of muddying the waters a bit. You know, I don't think you want people to pick who they want to cheer for, you know, when you bring them. I mean, we're not talking about AEW now, but Jade Cargill, it's established that she's a babyface, right? So she came to the ring, she's slapping hands with the fans. And I thought her promo, it was short, sharp, and straight to the point. She said, we've got a great women's locker room here, but no one is like me. So no one is better than me. So she puts them over, but then she puts herself over. Short, sharp, straight to the point. And just looking at her, she already has a presence that people are going to think that, damn, you know, she's got a point here. She comes out there, a couple of moves, the pump kick, the power slam, then the finisher, short, sharp, straight to the point. And the final message is that you're left on this SmackDown. Jade Cargill is a difference maker. Let's see what's going to happen moving forward.
Is there any, I'm trying to think how to phrase this. How big of a star do you think Jade Cargill is destined to be? And is there anything that causes you to hesitate? And I mean, maybe the answer is obvious, but hesitate in terms of how quickly she can ascend to becoming a arguably the biggest star in the women's division. When you look at the competition, it's formidable. Rhea Ripley, obviously a rising star. You can have a dream match between those two any time in the next 3 years if Jade works out. You've got Charlotte on the sidelines. She comes back. She's going to have something to say about this. Becky Lynch is trying to gain some traction again. On and on. It's a good division. Do you look at Jade as somebody who's going to be more of kind of an attraction on the side, or the person that they build around, and what will determine that?
Well, it depends how well she does in the ring, right? According to the expectations of the WWE office, if you like, and the fan in the ring. There's only so much you can do as far as these segments where she does a couple of moves here or there. But she's going to need a marquee match where she shows the fans that she can go in the ring. So they have to be very careful with her, who they put her in. Now, obviously, I think she's more naturally suited to be a heel. I mean, mate, I liked her presentation in AEW. You know, and I liked it when she had a couple of other people hanging around her. You know, I kind of liked that presentation of her and made her more of a bigger deal. So you always have that up your sleeve that she can turn heel and she can be a dominant heel and she can go on an undefeated streak. So I think they've always got that. I think it's going to be the final calling, if you like, to be as a heel and be as a dominant heel. I just think you have to be careful of who they put her in the ring with. But I think overall, she's got the confidence and the charisma. She's always going to stand out, and people are never going to think that she doesn't belong. But in the ring, in my mind, you always need sort of that marquee great match that fans can go back to and say, this is what you can do. You know, like in Charlotte and Rhea. I mean, Charlotte's been great for a long time, but Rhea really, really got put on the map with that match against Charlotte last year. And we know people have raved about that match. And I think you need that embedded in fans' minds. So she's going to need a great match down the line. And once she has that match, I think the sky's the limit for her. But like I said, with everyone, when you're presenting someone, it's not necessarily about how you are. It's who they put you in the ring with. Because if they don't put you in the right feud or the right person to play up against, you know, things don't always work out.
Yeah, no, very well said. And that having a standout competitive back and forth match that goes beyond, you know, what Goldberg did, you know, when he was getting over. I think in this era, for people to really get behind her and not have her be, like I said, kind of off to the side as a special attraction, but that, you know, perennial for, you know, years in a row, the person everyone's talking about, who is she going to face at WrestleMania? And it will be the last match of the show. Will it deliver you know, in that, you know, kind of needed 3+ star range? I don't want to, you know, go into the 4.5-star range for her at this point. It'd be great if that's the case. But I think the bar is to just get past that kind of 2.5 to 3/4 range. You know, it's subjective, but, you know, people kind of know what you mean. It's shorthand for a match that doesn't leave you super, feeling super emotionally invested while you're watching or drained afterwards. And it just sort of feels like it's there. You want something beyond that. And she has a lot of those key traits that some people who are really good, quote, workers, athletes, don't have. So they can have those matches that are really good and crisp, and they're in the right place at the right time. There's a lot of movement, some dazzling moves, but they don't grab the fans emotionally. It doesn't feel important. She has the other half down. So we'll see. In AEW, she was very limited, but she did grow. We saw her grow. And now she's in an environment from a pure resource standpoint, and as long as she has the attitude and the desire, she should be able to reach whatever her potential is. And she's, you know, doing a lot of training off camera, and her moves tonight, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people watch her in AEW are holding their breath a little bit, going, is this going to go well? Is everything going to be timed right? And it was, you know, I mean, it wasn't a lot, and she didn't do a lot in AEW, but she did progress. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's a fascinating story. I love when there's a new star upon the scene who feels special, but you also have hope that it's going to be more than just sort of superficial in terms of looks and appearance. It could go beyond that. And I think there's athleticism there that we've seen in a Raw format that can manifest into someone who can have epic main event matches, but she's got it to deliver. We have to see it with our own eyes. We can't, you know, be confident until we see it.
And I think we're having a match that, like a standout match, I think it doesn't necessarily about the star quality. In my mind, it's where you have a match and you exceed the expectations of the fans coming into it. Like, if you can make them say, wow, I didn't know that, you know, she had that in her or something. If you just can exceed, get yourself over the expectations of the fans, that's all you need. I think she's capable of having that. Another thing it sets itself up for, I believe Bianca Belair is undefeated at WrestleMania. So I think if that's the case and you build up an undefeated streak for Jade Cargill, you know, we could have a massive women's match at next year's WrestleMania where you have an undefeated Jade Cargill up against Bianca Belair streak. Now, there's money right there. I mean, you put that on posters, you promote the hell out of that. That sells right there. So if they play their cards right, and I've got all the confidence in the world with WWE's, with the way they're changing things on the fly for the better and their long-term booking strategy, I have all the confidence in the world that when we get to this match, it's going to be a big deal.
Do you fully expect now Jade, Naomi, and Bianca Belair against the other three members who aren't single champs in Damage Control? Is that?
Oh, it has to be. It has to be. Yeah. I mean, first of all, you need the women's tag team champions on the card, I believe. Yeah. You know, you can't leave them off for us and make them seem not important. And it's naturally there. A 3-on-3 matchup. It's women's tag. Yeah, definitely.
And I like that. I don't think that all the titles need to be defended on WrestleMania, I mean, especially women's tag. I mean, no offense, just it doesn't need to be on WrestleMania as long as they're on the show in some form or fashion. And yeah. I think Naomi and Bianca, with a dispute over how accepting they are Bayley against Bayley's enemies, Asuka and Kairi, who are the tag champs, would have worked for me. Let's say they felt Jade wasn't ready yet, or she suffered an ankle sprain or something a couple weeks ago, and they're like, we'll put it off till summer or SummerSlam or something. That'd be a fine match. It'd be fine. But you add Dakota and Jade to it, and you turn it into a 3-on-3, it does feel bigger now. And I think some people will even be anticipating potentially an angle, a teaser of Bianca versus Jade, in a way that's just planting a seed, not making people think it's imminent. And you want those moments at WrestleMania, and that will feel like a WrestleMania moment, having Jade debut at WrestleMania, essentially, in terms of being in a match. So, yeah, I think they put Dot in this, and the rollout so far is good, and the fact that she had the breathing space and the bandwidth to be the person this show was mostly about, I think, was smart. And like you say, WWE sends messages to fans the way they do things. Message has been sent. It has landed. They are signaling to everybody, she's a big deal. Look at where we put her and how we treated her.
If WWE want us to treat someone like a big deal, they have it in their power. And fans will pretty much accept what WWE told them. If WWE going to the effort to present someone in a certain way, it tells us that they're important and we must invest in them. They're the masters of their own universe, as is AEW too. You make it seem important. You tell us important. Go out of your way to do it. Then we'll treat it as important. And I'm looking forward to this matchup because I can see in this match, I mean, they should go ahead with it, right, this six-woman tag. And if they do, I can see Bianca and Jade almost trying to outdo one another with the power moves. And you've got the three women in there who can take the moves with Asuka, with Kairi Sane, and also Dakota Kai. So I see a moment with them too, almost trying to outshine one another in a sort of friendly type of way. And then referencing that moment later on when they get to that matchup. Because we all know it's all about moments. Create that moment, create that image, then reference that coming up to their match. So it's all set up for them. I mean, we can see this coming a mile away, but I think we're going to really enjoy the journey and how they get there.
All right, let's pause. Let's introduce ourselves in the show, and then we'll get on to other topics from SmackDown and the call and email portion of the show, too. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Show for Friday, March 29, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the weekly paper copy newsletter with over 1,800 issues published, including PDF and digital copies online for our VIP members, and also the website pwtorch.com, breaking news, live TV, and pay-per-view and PLA coverage, and flashback articles, special editorials, and other features. Hope you're checking that out on a daily basis, pwtorch.com. And that includes my live TV coverage of SmackDown on Fridays, Raw on Mondays, and Dynamite on Wednesdays, and sometimes Collision on Saturdays, plus pay-per-views and PLAs, including WrestleMania, coming up a week from tomorrow and a week from the day after tomorrow. And also the host of various podcasts, including the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling host shows, follow Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and sometimes Collision, and then also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. That's our Blue Logo show, featuring our weekly flagship where we cover a broad array of topics, the rotation of co-hosts, and also interview classics and other formats. Just search Wade Keller in your podcast app and subscribe to both. And the flagship this week dropped last night with Todd Martin, and it included an in-depth review and overview of new Randy Savage biography. that that just came out. And you'll want to listen to Todd's review of that and also our conversation about WWE, AEW, and more. It's an UFC talk, by the way, if you're an MMA fan. But first things first, we are here tonight talking SmackDown on our live stream at WadeKellerPoShow.com. You can always download the show if you can't listen to us live, as most people do, actually. They download the show afterwards by searching Wade Keller and subscribing and downloading the show. But we are live, and we are taking your calls, and keep an eye on the inbox for email. And the other voice you hear so far on the show is Jason Australia, as we refer to him. He's Jason E. from Australia. Jason, welcome. Good to have you as co-host on this week's show for the full span of the show.
You're right, Wade. That actually is my last name, Australia. I mean, that would be incredibly ironic.
Coincidental.
Yeah. Coincidental. Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for, coincidental. That's
It'd be right, ironic yeah. if you're from New Zealand.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Jason, New Zealand. Nah, we don't have to go there. We've got a friendly rivalry with New Zealand. We love them, but we still got a bit of a friendly rivalry. I like the shout-out, though. You know what I like tonight? I like the shout-out that Wade Barrett gave to the All Blacks to say that Dakota Kai's grandfather used to play for the All Blacks. Of course, the All Blacks, one of the greatest teams in all sport, rugby union. And I'll tell you what, if you've got that energy in you, you're definitely a tough person, because those All Blacks, mate, we have had some great battles with them as far as the Australian Wallabies are concerned and the All Blacks. But I'm going off on a tangent here. Yeah, Wade, I appreciate you having me on the show. Mate, I've been a wrestling fan since 1990, pretty much non-stop. So that's about 34 years now. I grew up as a big Jake the Snake fan, also Bobby the Brain Heenan, so I guess that's just the way I look at my wrestling through that type of lens.
Two good choices.
Look, I was 8 when I started watching, and straight away I fell in love with Bobby the Brain Heenan. I mean, his sarcasm, his quick wit, and then I sort of gravitated towards Jake because of DDT and Snake and the way that he came across different. So
yeah.
I guess I've always kind of looked at wrestling through that lens. You know, I'm kind of more of a promo interview kind of guy. Make everything count. You don't have to go out there and do 45 versions of a suplex, 27 moonsaults. Just make it count. Make it important. Most of all, make me feel what you're doing in the ring and how you come across. So I guess throughout my life, that's how I've always viewed my wrestling. And I like to look at myself as a hardcore fan, but with sort of a casual fan's mind.
Yeah, no, promos are what put me in. You know, the AWA territory that I first saw as a kid was, it's well known historically, it's one of the best promo territories, or back then, interviews, they were called, with me in Oakland interviewing Bobby the Brain Heenan on a weekly basis, Jesse the Body Ventura, Crusher Jerry Blackwell, Mad Dog Vachon, The Crusher, Nick Bockwinkle, on and on. Just great, great promos. Barry Bone Raschke, I could go on. And that's what put me in. The larger-than-life personalities, the diverse body types and looks and personalities, face and heel, Vern Gagne, the everyman, patriarch, and the common guy, Jim Brunzel with Greg Gagne. I mean, just a great diverse mix, really great roster. They had good wrestling, too, no question about it, but it was known for promos. And Bobby Heenan, class of his own, and still my ultimate favorite performer in any category of pro wrestling. And his best work was in the AWA by a wide margin, and he was so good in the WWF and WWE that it's amazing he could be a lot better than that, and he actually was in his younger days, because he was one of the best bump takers in the business, period, as a manager. And that wasn't something he physically was able to do in the WWF and, you know, the WWF at that time. You know, you played a slightly different role in terms of the range of your character than you did. A lot of the wrestlers did before they got to the WWF, but he was phenomenal there, but another level better than AWA. I can't rave enough about the work he did and what he did to help me fall in love with pro wrestling back then.
Well, I feel unfortunate that I never got to see that in real time. I only got to see him in WWF. But I got to tell you, Wade, like he's the reason why I actually started following Shawn Michaels as my favorite after Jake the Snake. Because at WrestleMania 8, after Shawn had his opening match with El Matador, Bobby the Brain Heenan was on the headset and goes, "Look, actually, I've just got some important news. Shawn Michaels has left the building." And because I grew up as a bit of an Elvis fan, and that was said about Elvis, I was like, wait a minute, if Bobby the Brain Heenan is using an Elvis line for Shawn Michaels, Shawn Michaels has to be the man. And I started, Shawn Michaels became my favorite in 92, And I think I picked a pretty good person because he went on to be one of the all-time greats. So I think Bobby for saying that. It's like these little comments he made me think and made me laugh. And I think this guy's amazing. So but those personalities, I mean, wrestling's all about personalities, the larger than the life character. Yes, you've got to be able to do what you've got to do in the ring, but it's the personalities and the wit and that ability to make you feel and suspend your disbelief. That's what it's all about to me.
All right, well, let's give out the phone or the email, and we'll pivot back to SmackDown. But if anybody wants to rave about Bobby Heenan, I'm fine with that, too. The phone number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. When you call push 1, that'll flag you on the switchboard so we know that you will be on the show. You can also email the show, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. You do not have to listen to the live stream. Participate if you're watching the shows and you drop us an email with a question or a comment. We can include it on the show, and then you can listen back later to see if it made it onto the show. And you can find links to our live stream. If that interests you and you normally download the show, but it works on a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday night to listen live, you can also find a link to the direct stream of the show in my TV reports at the top and bottom at pwtorch.com. So just check that out for the links to the live stream, or you can navigate to it at waitkillerpostshow.com. All right, let's go to the phone lines and bring in Charlie Kate, a PW Torch contributor. He's going to be doing the SmackDown Hits and Misses columns moving forward, and he is the first caller today. Charlie, welcome. Good to hear from you again. What's on your mind about SmackDown?
How's it going, guys? How are you doing tonight?
Good.
Good. I just finished up my hits and misses article. I got one thing I want to say about Io Sky, but I know I was on the Monday call and Jason didn't get to say anything about the Rock Cody beatdown. So I wanted to just see if he had anything he wanted to add about that, because I'm always interested in his takes on these shows.
Yeah, Jason.
Well, I appreciate that, Charlie. Yeah, well, in relation to the Rock Cody beatdown, I mean, I obviously loved it. You know what I mean? I thought, just like everyone else, it's heat. I like heat. And I was probably one of the many people that actually thought the Rock was going to be a double agent. You know, I sort of floated that theory and thought and looked at all the signs and whatnot, and that theory got completely blown out of the water. But I just loved the beatdown, and I loved it that it established Rock as a heel, and it gives Cody an obstacle to get over. And I think that's what most fans want. Fans want heat. And to see Cody bleed like that, obviously it helps with the, you know, with the blonde hair that he has. And also the setting where you had a bit of rain falling as well. It just played into everything perfectly. So we don't often see this. And the fact that we saw it a couple of weeks leading into WrestleMania, it just made me look forward to this matchup even more. And as we were discussing with Wade, Charlie, I like the fact that they tied up a loose end with Paul Heyman saying that Roman Reigns authorized this. So Roman Reigns is not being overshadowed. If anything, he's choosing to be overshadowed by The Rock in this dominant performance against Cody, because he knows that by doing that, it's going to help him maintain his power as the tribal chief, and he's very paranoid about keeping power. So I like the way they tied into that tonight, and I just love the overall beatdown. My only criticism of it, Wade and Charlie, and I'll get your thoughts on it, and this is a very slight criticism, I would have liked to see Cody have just a little bit of flurry of an offense, just to fight back just a little bit before the final boss sort of kicked him in the balls. You know what I mean? Like a heel thing. I just, you know, Rock just completely dominated him, and I was just waiting for a couple of punches or a couple of something. We didn't really see it. It's not a massive criticism, but we could have seen that. I don't like it when baby faces just get completely and totally dominated. If there's just one, just a little bit of fire from Cody, but that's a minor criticism.
Yeah, I would have voted for that. You know, in the pitch meeting for how the segment should go, a little bit of a hope spot from Cody that Rock just sort of arrogantly and easily, you know, knocks down because he got such an early advantage in beating Cody down, but giving you that little moment that tells fans, yeah, he's got fight in him, and I can't wait to see, you know, I mean, obviously people want to see Cody and Roman, but I also now want to see Cody and Rock. And I mean, I guess the only criticism of the angle in a macro sense is, did that down actually shift focus, too much focus away from people wanting to to see Cody beat Reigns and start thinking about, when will Cody get a chance to fight Rock? Because, you know, that was for WWE a hardcore beatdown. They don't do blood often. I mean, like, pretty much never in a TV angle. So in a macro sense, that would be the only hesitation I have. Charlie, I'll throw back to you for any follow-up that I think Jason has there, or another topic if you want.
Yeah, I'll say that's a good point by Jason about some Cody offense. I guess the one caveat I'll throw in is he did fight off Solo and then Jimmy and then walked outside and was blindsided opening a door by, you know, giant, formidable Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And, you know, The Rock was fighting dirty. So I'll take it. A couple trash can hits to the head. I mean, who wouldn't be knocked down by that? But yeah, hell of a show. I was at the arena in person and talked to Wade the other night. It was
yeah.
It was quite a night. I'm still riding the high. Yeah, one thing I want to bring up, I won't take up too much of your guys' time, but Io Sky's promo, and like I said, I just got done doing the hits and misses, so I'm going to kind of just read from what I put down. I like seeing a more serious Io and think she is capable of a lot more character work when not sharing her airtime with the rest of Damage Control. It, you know, I think a lot of people liked her singles work in NXT, but totally understand main roster, not everyone saw the past, much like DIY. But more specifically, the subtitled promos feel like Shinsuke's thing. I mean, almost just because they were so successful and are so popular already. And I think they begin to feel a little watered down when you start having Io and, you know, Andrade as well, who, at least for now, they're both heels, and they're getting the same presentation. So I put this in my report. I'm not sure there's a better direction for promos of wrestlers who are not fluent in English, but I hope WWE can come up with a more varied approach to their international stars, because, you know, a good thing done too many times by different people just waters it down, and then you got to pivot to something else to make guys stand out, make guys and girls stand out. The SmackDown hits and misses will be up tonight or tomorrow. Hope you guys enjoy. And, trying to be a more frequent presence on these shows. And want to thank Wade again for the opportunity. And, hope everyone has a great WrestleMania week leading in the next week. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Charlie. Yeah. So I think that's an interesting point, because the Shinsuke Nakamura vignettes have been really effective. And should that be, Jason, something that's sort of for Nakamura or for someone else later but not overlapping? Or is it okay to have that be a format that greatly expands your ability for wrestlers who either don't know English or aren't comfortable or fluent or convincingly expressive in English compared to whatever their main language is? Is it fine to use that format for others, especially top level wrestlers like your champion or a new signing who's going to be in the mix? What do you think?
I see what Charlie's saying, and it's an interesting point. I think, Wade, you've got to take a case-by-case basis. So why I liked it tonight is I feel like Io hasn't stood out from Damage Control over the past few weeks, and she sort of just blended in. And she is the women's champion, right? So I think we needed to be able to understand her motivations and her thoughts about Bayley leading into this big match against WrestleMania. And if her English isn't completely fluent, she might not be able to get across the point as well as what people might want her to. So to have these subtitles and to read them, but as you're reading the subtitles, right, even if you don't understand Japanese, you're picking up on the inflection. So the inflection and the force behind her words is matching the subtitles. So it's, you even get a greater understanding of what she's saying and where she's coming from, you know, because you're reading the subtitles as well and making sense of it. So I liked it tonight because I think they needed to establish how she feels as an individual, her motivations, what she feels about Bayley. And there was a bit of anger behind it, but also about, no, Bayley's going to get what she deserves from my point of view. So I think you take it a case-by-case basis with the subtitles, but leading to a big time WrestleMania match. For me, it worked.
Yeah, my take on it is Shinsuke is not a big deal at this point, and I'm a Shinsuke fan, but he's not going to be winning the Royal Rumble next year and headlining WrestleMania. You don't save something that is that effective for all the reasons you said, Jason, and limit it to just him. It's not trying to think of something comparable, like House of Black and AEW or Karrion Kross and Scarlett, where they do the dark, ominous pre-records with, you know, it's eerie and darkened and all that. Yeah, you don't want every heel doing that. Like, there's things that are very specific to the personality, to the gimmick. But with Shinsuke, I mean, they spice up in terms of the music and the lighting and Shinsuke's demeanor in a way that's different than Andrade. It's different than Io Sky. And so I think having solo promos with captions can be applied rather liberally to different wrestlers if they have talent and can express themselves, like you say, with inflection. That comes across even if you don't understand the language, and then the captions fill that gap. But you can personalize each of them in a certain way so they stand out more. So I'm not too worried. I'm not actually at all worried about that. In fact, I think it opens up more roster spots for really talented wrestlers who otherwise have been limited or just written off as marketable because, you know, this is a wrestling show where, as JC and I talked about in our introduction segment, you know, talking is a very big part of what makes pro wrestling work. And if you don't speak English, it's, you know, weekly 2-hour cable format show where there's a lot of talking. It becomes tough to connect with fans as complete a way as it does for people who speak the same language as the fans. So I think the captions are a good way to bridge that.
And look, they've come a long way because before with Japanese wrestlers, they would always have them talk in a comical, yelling way. So in order for them to talk this way, use their natural inflection and to have the subtitles, they've come a long way and it's a lot better and it's a lot more respectful to them and also the audience.
Yes. All right. Number is 347-215-8558. Give us a call. Push 1. On your keypad to let us know you want to be on the show. You can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. Okay, so we talked about the women's division a bit. I want to go to Stephen Baltimore, who emailed and said, Wade, Bailey had the worst build of any – did Bailey have the worst build of any Royal Rumble in history? She seems to have completely disappeared, and tonight it would have been natural to have her run out at the end and make the save. Am I the only one thinking this? I was thinking that Bailey was going to run out, not Jade, but possible Jade would, but it seemed more natural. Bailey would, with the idea being that she would sort of win over the skeptical Bianca, and instead Jade did. We talked about the absence of Roman and Rock and Cody on the second to last show before Mania, and certainly next Friday is going to be, you know, won't say a recap show because Jay and Solo announced, But, you know, they don't need to do any, like, go-home angle. I mean, that's what we saw on Monday, essentially, and all the interaction with Cody and Roman before that. So this was kind of that last, not the last chance, but the most logical time that you expect Bailey to have one more big moment. And it didn't happen. So how do you feel about Steve's framing of it and his indicating he thinks it's perhaps a mistake?
Yeah, I understand what Steve is saying, Wade. I guess I don't really have a strong opinion on it, to be honest with you, in regards to Bailey. I don't know. I just don't have a strong opinion either way. I mean, ended up attacking Ego. It's very personal. Yeah, I could go... I don't know. I'm not trying to dodge the question. I just don't really feel passionate about it either way because I think it was more important to establish Jade Cargill, you know, a couple of weeks before WrestleMania to get her out. That, to me, was more important. And I think Bailey, with her personality and the credits, if you like, she has with the fans, I think she's going to be more than okay with her match against Io, and the crowd will definitely be behind her. So I understand the concern, but I'm not overly concerned myself.
Yeah. All right. I want to shift to talking about Logan Paul's role on this show because Logan Paul's really good at what he does already in WWE, and the U.S. champ, and he's against two, you know, big legacy names in Kevin Owens and Randy Orton at WrestleMania. Do you like what they snuck in with him tonight? You know, thought, you know, last week it was like, ah, oh, they're going to have Randy and KO team against Pretty Deadly. The match can be more about Randy and Kevin Owens, and, you know, the sort of predictable pattern would be, oh, there's some sort of dispute, bump into each other, pull out of proportion, someone loses, the other blames them, and in the whole, in Pretty Deadly, they're just sort of the backdrop of that. It actually turned out, no, that the they were being well and getting along, and Logan Paul came in and wrecked things, and then ended up scurrying away. There was a brief misunderstanding with Orton going, how did you lose Kevin Owens, until he saw the replay and what happened. What you think? I'll just throw you without further question too much more than that.
I know it's just the segment that was there, to be honest with you. You know, it was either not really much of a cheap fight because, once again, Logan Paul hits someone with the brass knucks. We know that's his thing that he wants to do. You know, I thought there would be that typical miscommunication. I like the fact that Randy saw what happened on the screen. So instead of just blaming Kevin for the loss, like he actually saw, well, it actually wasn't Kevin's fault, because in previous times it would almost seem like wrestlers would just ignore what happened and blame the other person, even though they could clearly see it wasn't their fault. So I guess this segment to me was just there, and it establishes Logan as a heel. He's going up against Orton and Kevin Owens. But it also establishes that, you know, if it's a trip, look, here's the thing, right? If it's a triple threat match, obviously it's a disqualification, right? So there's nothing stopping Logan from just hitting them both with the nuts whenever he can. Not the nuts, the brass knuckles, and just, you know, winning this match 1 minute in. So that's where you've got to sort of switch your brain off, because unless there is a rule where it's saying even though it's triple threat and no disqualification, there will be no brass knuckles. So I don't know if they're going to play into that, but overall, this match, that is something for Randy to do. They need something for Logan to do. They need something for Kevin Owens to do. I don't see Randy Orton winning the United States title. I don't see Kevin Owens doing it. Perhaps Kevin and Randy have their blow-up at WrestleMania because something happens. I'm not really sure. But then it's every person for themselves. So for me, this overall segment and this overall feud, it's kind of just there, and I don't really have a strong opinion on it either way.
Is there a reason to not get rid of the no DQ stuff? Because use the match we're talking about as an example, and I'm not saying this is the finish I want to see, but let's say Logan used brass knuckles. The ref qualifies him. So now it's Randy against KO, and they wrestle. One of them gets a pinfall, submission, a count-out win, or one of them cheats and gets DQ'd. And now by process elimination, you have a winner by DQ. What stops triple threat matches from being elimination style only when it comes to disqualifications? Why not do that? Because to me, that's like multitudes better than a ludicrous situation where a wrestler can literally do anything to retain a title or win a title, and actually seems foolish not to, especially if a heel does it and the babyface doesn't. You say turn your brain off. My goal is to have as few instances while you're watching any form of entertainment where you need to turn your brain off. And to me, it seems pretty easy for WWE or any company to go, yeah, triple threat matches, it's not elimination style. First one to score pinfall or submission wins, but you can get DQ'd for breaking the rules. And if you do, you're out of the match, and then it becomes 1-1. Why not take that approach?
Maybe that's a little bit too much for the fans to comprehend, because it's an extra thing for them to think about. So the only way it works with a DQ is if it is an elimination style match, because if Logan gets DQ'd, then who wins the match? Is it Orton or Kevin Owens, right? I think
The elimination is only for DQ. Otherwise, it's a standard match. I don't know.
Maybe they feel like that's an instruction that's a little bit too much to think about. So they just make it no DQ because they don't want to have to explain that. Because if that's the case, then every fatal four-way, five-way, three-way, it should be elimination style. So if Logan does get DQ, well, then he's automatically out, and then Kevin and Randy have their match.
Yeah.
But it's not like that. It's first pinfall for the victory, right? But if they change it, then you allow the DQs. But they don't want to do that. So yeah, the only way they get around it is if they ban the brass knuckles. So I hope they do that. I hope Nick Aldis says they're banned.
Well, but if you ban them and Logan uses them, what happens?
Well, then he outsmarted everyone. I mean, again, so there's a problem, Wade. You're asking too many questions.
Exactly. And I don't like instances where it's fair. You know, there's a solution to having to turn your brain off. Do Pretty Deadly gain anything from this? Or
not really. No, not really. I mean, it's something for them to brag about later on, that we beat Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. We beat two future Hall of Famers. It's just something to add to their resume.
Right.
It's a bragging point. They didn't really get put over. It's just a bragging point for down the line. Kind of like Austin Theory with John Cena at WrestleMania, right? John Cena put over Solo Sikoa in a big way. He kind of slipped on a banana peel against Austin Theory. I mean, Theory cheated to win. It's something to have on the resume that you can refer to. So there's a difference between that and actually getting put over, if you know what I mean. And I know you know what I mean. So, you know, Pretty Deadly winning this match. Yeah, it's just meant to reference in the future to say they got a tag team victory over KO and Randy Orton.
I hope they do, by the way. I hope they don't shut
well,
up.
They should.
Yeah.
They have to. That's the goal. I mean, they should even like have a thing that they might even say, we're going to retire on top or something. I don't know. That play up into it. You know, we defeated two future Hall of Famers. No one thought we could do it. They had an over-the-top celebration or whatever. You know, they just keep going on and on about it. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so we also had AJ Styles come up the week after. They showed the angle where LA Knight showed up on Styles' property and they had a brawl and came and hauled LA Knight away. Styles said he didn't love this old school, you know, thing. I could have had him arrested, but I want to solve this in the ring, not by having the police punish him. I want to punish him myself in the ring. Usually it's a baby face saying that. So it's a little bit weird that it's the heel showing up at the baby face's house. The babyface showed up at the heel's house, and that's supposed to make us more sympathetic with LA Knight than Styles. But what do you think of the angle tonight, but then also step back, and how do you feel about LA Knight versus AJ Styles? Does it feel like, well, we want to both on WrestleMania, neither of them have an obvious feud, so let's figure out a way to tell a story with them, because they both deserve to be at WrestleMania and not just in a Battle Royal? Or does this feel like, no, this is a good feud that might have been planned before it was clear there weren't, quote, better opponents for either of them?
I think a bit of both. I think it is definitely to get them onto WrestleMania because they both deserve it. AJ Styles and LA Knight, and you need LA Knight on WrestleMania, considering, you know, all the momentum that he's had over the past several months. But in fairness to the WWE, they have been telling the story when sort of LA Knight sort of pushed AJ to the side when they had that confrontation with the Bloodline leading into their four-way match at WrestleMania. Now, and I can understand why AJ wants LA Knight in the ring, because he wants to expose LA Knight. And it's a common thing that we've had with heels, that they're upset that LA Knight's just sort of waltzed in, taken over, got in the crowd support, and everyone thinks he's a big deal, and these heels don't like it. And AJ Styles, and an established veteran, doesn't like the fact that this relative newcomer, LA Knight, took over his spot in the Saudi Arabia event, and now he wants to expose him for the fraud he is. He feels he's been disrespectful to him, so he's not going to press charges on him like a heel would. He wants him in the ring to prove a point. So I get that from his character motivation point of view, even though that's what a typical heel would do. An AJ situation, wanting to expose LA Knight as a fraud and someone who doesn't deserve his position, this is why he wants him in the ring. And I think overall, Wade, the way that I gather things, I can imagine LA Knight and AJ Styles saying, listen, not in a championship match. We have to make this feud as personal as possible. I like the fight that I've been seeing from AJ Styles, because I think he's coming across really well, being disgruntled at LA Knight. And LA Knight's doing what LA Knight does. You know, he's going out there, he's making the most of his minutes. He's still getting a strong crowd reaction. This is a personal feud at WrestleMania. And I think LA Knight obviously will go over. At least they've given me a reason to care about this match. And in fairness, it has been building and told a story over the past 3 months or so. So for me, it's a tick.
What do you think of LA Knight more broadly? What do you think of the surge of popularity that he had, and then what has happened since then, and if you think he's at the right water level now, or it's unfortunate that he isn't in a higher spot, or you know he's going to fade away even more than this.
Well, I don't think he's going to fade away. I think he's obviously a bit of a throwback. You know, people have said he's sort of a combination between The Rock and Austin as far as his pro mobility is concerned. But you obviously have to be able to go in the ring. He's showing that he can go in the ring, all right? Like, obviously, look, he's not going to go out there and do all these somersault plant, whatever the hell, right? He has, to, in my mind, I like the way he wrestles because to me, he makes everything count. I like the way LA Knight wrestles. So, for me, I'm a fan of his. I think he maximizes his minutes. I think he is somebody who, well, he's, look, they gave him that match against Roman and they gave him that out where Solo went to bid. So he can always reference that and say that he was that close to winning a championship. But like I said, Wade, it's always interesting when you're booking these type of people. If you're not booking them championship matches and you want to keep their momentum going, then you're going to have to put them in personal feuds where people care about them. So that's what they're doing with AJ Styles. AJ Styles is an established veteran. He has a credibility with the fans. You put LA Knight against him, right? The question is, where do you go after WrestleMania and how do you maintain his momentum? The natural opponent for LA Knight is Logan Paul. LA Knight sooner or later has to win a championship. And if he's going to win a championship, he's not going to be a world heavyweight champion. He's not going to be the WWE. Intercontinentals with Gunther. I think the next natural opponent, as far as promo abilities is concerned, and to keep momentum on his side as his babyface, is a Logan Paul. So we'll see if they do go down that path with him.
Yeah, I was thinking we were going to get that at Mania. And there's part of me that still wishes they did. Orton and KO is fine, but I don't know.
But maybe they're not ready to take the title off Logan Paul, and you can't afford to have LA Knight be unsuccessful in another title defense. Even if it's shenanigans or whatnot, when he has this title match of Logan Paul, he has to eventually win. And if you're not going to put the title on LA Knight, then don't put it at all. That's why I got Orton and KO.
I think in a general sense, it's a really good point for everyone to keep in mind that right now isn't always the best time to have the best match that you can have right now. Because sometimes the best match you can have right now is even better for certain reasons. Like, for example, you just said, to save for later, and you will sacrifice. Or you just think the card is so loaded, we don't need to put this match on because we've got enough other things going on. We'll save that for when we need it more to prop up a show, when we don't have Reigns versus Cody. We don't have Rock. We don't have XYZ going on also. And, yeah, I mean, you want WrestleMania to be as good as it can be, but if you're not ready to do the finish that you want to do for the feud, and you also can put Orton and KO in there instead, it's a good enough substitution. And Styles has a challenge. I know he's not, you know, he's exiting his prime as the guy who everyone has a great match with, kind of like Jericho is in AEW, but I expect Styles to pull something out of LA Knight in terms of in-ring work and WrestleMania performance that even if they don't go real long, it ought to be one of LA Knight's better WWE matches, don't you, Jason?
Yeah, but like I said, I'm not overly critical of LA Knight's matches. I mean, I personally, this is just my point of view. I like them. I like what he does in the ring. I like his style more than, say, others. I think, well, look, his style suits him. You know, everyone needs to have a style that suits them. So as far as AJ, what they can do in their match, I mean, to me, as long as, look, Wade, I'll put it like this, as long as they're not getting dropped on their head, getting injured, and everything is fluid and crisp, that's all that matters to them. Yep. And they don't do anything that's outside their character's constitution, if you like, which I know is one of your favorite words.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, you and I are very similar in all these regards. We also have an angle with Rey Mysterio coming out and addressing what Dom did to him last week. And then the reveal that Dragon Lee is now aligned with Rey and the LWO. What do you think of this angle? And did this work for you tonight? And where do you think it's headed as far as WrestleMania goes?
Not really. I actually would have preferred if he picked Carlito, even the fans wanted that. And
Carlito was sort of looking like, what about me? He was standing there.
Exactly. What about Carlito?
I don't know if it was intentional. Yeah.
Well, you know, because the thing about Dragon Lee is that, I mean, he's, for my calculations, he's pretty much lost to Santos three times
on
SmackDown. And hasn't been much on a winning streak. I mean, he's great in the ring and he's flashy and whatnot, but he hasn't notched many credible victories. So it kind of wouldn't make sense for a way to pick Dragon Lee, considering Santos has defeated him three times. So I guess it's a way to put him on the card and say we want him to be the next Rey Mysterio. But they've been a little bit stop-startish with Dragon Lee, so this segment didn't overly work for me. But yes, it puts Dom and Santos together. Santos is going to benefit from this, you know, two heels together, two dislikable heels. But raping Dragon Lee, I get why they did it. I just wish that they had built Dragon Lee up a little bit better, well, a lot better in the previous weeks.
Yes. Talk about Dom a little bit and what trajectory you see him on, because he continues to impress me. And I was, you know, I was a booster of him early on. I saw some subtleties even as a babyface before the punk, you know, rebellious son angle played out that he had it in him. The way that he was nursing his injury backstage, the way he apologizes to Ripley, his bravado under certain circumstances and cowardice under others. He's got some really good instincts that so many people don't have. And then a distinct look with, again, really good emotions. And he's coming along in the ring. But so those are my thoughts on Dom. How about you?
I mean, I love Dom. And, you know, straight away as he walks, he's got the chewing of the gum down pat. He's chewing the gum, the over-exaggerated chew. I mean, that's what heels did in the 80s and the early 90s. You know, we're coming
it's
out
what
here.
What people in society do today. If you want to be a heel, chew gum like Dom.
So straight away, he's getting the heat. You know, and he, you know, he's not overly built, but he has the tattoos which sort of make up for it, if you know what I mean. It can disguise that he doesn't have the world's most muscly arms, so that works for him. I think his overall look is great. It's interesting what's happening with him and Rhea and Judgment Day, and it just seems to be a theme with Judgment Day all the time, that there's always a bit, what do you mean by that? What are you doing out there? Why don't you run this by me? There always seems to be this bubbling tension within Judgment Day. And, you know, I found it interesting that WWE openly showed Rhea at the USC event with Buddy Murphy. You know, I don't know if they're going to play into that, not Buddy necessarily, or are they working at breaking Rhea and Dom away? Because, you know, I mean, Dom's wedding was pretty much all over Instagram. And, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes that's, oh, well, people are going to see it anyway, so what's the point? I don't know. So I don't know how close. They're not really playing off the Dom and mum relationship as sort of like a boyfriend-girlfriend type of thing like they were before. It's just like Rhea has become true mum, mother of the group. And, you know, they try to portray her as that heel against Becky on Monday when even Samantha introduced her at Judgment Day's Rhea Ripley. So, you know what I mean? So it's just interesting the dynamic and what's going to happen moving forward with Rhea and Dom, how they play off the relationship. Is it more just sort of like Rhea's the boss of the group and Dom's going along with her as mummy? Because I think that's sort of moved away from them being kind of in a relationship.
Yeah.
Is that what you're picking up?
Yeah, I think so too. I think they felt perhaps uncomfortable with it, given both of their personal lives being known publicly and not wanting. I mean, as much as wrestling's a work and, you know, Reigns is, you know, portrayed as a good dad by Paul Heyman, you know, in media interviews, like, you don't want somebody just so good against the honor character. The level of inauthenticity that kind of undercuts what you're going for. But what do you think is happening with the Judgment Day? Like, what's going to happen the rest of the year with them? What's the break point? What causes it? Who splits?
I don't know, because I really enjoy the Judgment Day. I enjoy their dynamic, but I don't know, because there always seems to be this simmering tension. Like, they have to prove themselves to one another. And why did you go out there and doing that? And then it's always, oh, okay, we're going to take care of business. You know what I mean? There always seems to be some type of tension within the group. It's interesting that Damian Priest mentioned tonight that he has his own things he wants to take care of. And they said, well, what do you mean by that? So is that in reference to the briefcase? We don't know. More than likely, that would be in the World Heavyweight title match. So does he do something there? I don't know coming out of it. Obviously, it looks like Rhea become a babyface, although they really pushed her towards a strong heel role against Becky. I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, with Dominic, you know, he's obviously going to remain a heel. eventually I do see him and Ray reuniting somehow. I don't know how they're going to do that. You know, I don't know if that's going to happen sooner or later, but I guess overall it's just a wait and see approach to Judgment Day. Because like I said, Wade, there just always seems to be this simmering tension amongst the group, and it has been for a while, but then they tend to get over it. So I'm taking a wait and see approach with them.
Yeah, there will be a moment where Dom and Ray reconcile. In the question is, can Ray be an active wrestler long enough for it to be the right timeline for Dom to turn babyface? And then how popular does Dom end up being ultimately as a babyface? I'm not ruling out that, and I'm thinking, you know, 3 years from now is sort of the over-under. He could be a kind of a breakout, like, you know, top four, you know, number four, number five babyface for WWE for a while. You know, on one or two shows, not necessarily for all on the whole roster. And do you agree with me on that, that there's an upside for Dom once he turns face or, you know, kind of grows into the part and has more of a history with fans to grow into something more than the role he's in now?
Oh, definitely. There's definitely a strong future for Dom. Once the fans get out of the system booing him, once he makes that reconciliation with Ray and done in the right way, fans will get behind him because, you know, we've often heard that in order for fans to get really behind you as a character, you need to turn heel first. So you need to show that sort of vicious side, get the fans to get all that hatred, if you like, out of their system for you. Then you turn the baby face and it's like, all right, now we're on your side.
Yeah. Okay. The tag team title qualifier matches for the ladder match took place. There were some other things kind of built into it. We had the Trovitz losing, but set up an angle afterwards with Karrion Kross and AOP, and then Bobby Lashley getting beat down in addition to the Profits. Give me your updated thoughts on how the Profits of Lashley and Electra Lopez are being portrayed and how it's being executed, because it's still feels, I mean, obviously against Darian Waller, so they were the baby faces, and they have been the baby faces lately, but there's still aspects of their act that seem like there's still remnants of when they were going to frame them as a heel when they're trying to give them a refresh. So I don't know what to make of it other than what I said. They're being framed as baby faces, but there's kind of heelish aspects to how they carry themselves that might work because of that, or despite that. What do you think, Jason?
I don't know. I think the Street Profits are kind of spinning their wheels, to be honest with you, and I think they have been for a while. And they're just a victim of circumstances because they had all those matches against the Usos and they weren't able to win because they wanted the Usos to hold the titles for the longest time. They tried to turn the Street Profits, I think, would have worked as a heel group, as a heel tandem, if they weren't associated with Bobby Lashley. But because Bobby Lashley is so popular, and they try to push him as a heel, and the fans wouldn't go with it. So I actually hope, I've seen enough of the Street Profits as a tag team. I hope they split up in an amicable way. I don't need to see them go against one another. Drop one of them to Raw, keep one on SmackDown, and let's see what they can do as single competitors. I think they've done all they can do as a tag team. I'm ready for Montez Ford as a breakout single star. I want to see what Dawkins can do. I think he's dramatically improved. Obviously, with his physique, I think he's underrated as well. I want to see what those two can do as singles. And I think now's the time to do it because, to me, it's kind of spinning their wheels at the moment, and there's not really much to do with it.
What do you expect on next week's SmackDown out of the solo J match that was announced? Do we see – we're going to see Jimmy involved in some form or fashion. And Heyman will be there because he – travels to a lot more shows than Roman does, but is Roman there? I mean, shouldn't he be? Does that mean then Cody runs out to help save Jay again, or is this kind of low-key and it's just more, or Jay versus So and Jimmy and Heyman are there, but that's it?
Well, I'm not really sure, to be honest with you, Wade. I mean, I think, you know, I understand what people are saying about Solo. He hasn't really done much since he defeated John Cena, right? That great victory against Cena looks so dominant. And I don't even know if he's won a match against them. I mean, I think he's lost a couple, but he hasn't won a match. So do they want to put Jay over clean against Solo? Do you want the interference to backfire? Or do you just want Jay just to look like he's going to defeat Solo and then Jimmy comes in for the interference and whatnot? You know, your basic 1-on-1 booking leading into, you know, your big match at the pay-per-view. So I'm not really sure what we're going to see with this. Either way, it's going to be obviously set up the match, Jimmy versus Jay. Maybe put a bit of heat on Jimmy, so fans are looking forward to Jay getting his revenge, because it's not like Jimmy needs a heat, though, because he has cost Jay, you know, three title opportunities. So that's an interesting one. But what I don't want to see, I don't want to see Solo taking a pin. I think most people would agree with this. They need to keep him. We don't need to see the vision of him copying another pin, because he's been kind of put in the back burner with this whole Bloodline storyline and since The Rock's been introduced.
Stepping back from a moment from just tonight's SmackDown, what do you think of the overall WrestleMania lineup as it's taking shape? With night one, we know The Rock and Cody against Rock and Rage against Cody and Seth is taking place. Night two, we know Seth and Drew and Roman and Cody. Beyond that, it's not really sorted out yet. We've got the two women's singles matches for the two singles titles, likely the women's tag champs in a six-woman tag match with Jade Kirkle, too. We've got the six-pack tag team ladder match with the tag titles at stake, and then some grudge matches, Jimmy, LA Knight, and AJ Styles, and then also the U.S. title match that we talked about, Logan Paul, Orton, KO. That's where things stand now. I'm trying to think if I left anything obvious off that hasn't officially been announced. When I run down that show and as you've looked at it get formed, what do you think?
Well, I think it's not like you need every match to be this marquee matchups. Over two nights, where I think you'd want at least six matches to get yourself to really excited. You know what I mean? So you want three on night one, three on night two. So. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've got six, but overall, when I'm looking at it, obviously the tag match with The Rock and Roman versus Seth and Cody, that's just going to, I mean, there's so many implications. I mean, they've really built this up, right? So, I mean, that's the match I'm looking forward to the most, right? You obviously got Roman and Cody. That has a lot of interest. I think Drew versus Seth has a lot of interest. I mean, it's just issue weight. I mean, you talk about sliding door moments. I mean, Punk coming back in November. Then he's getting injured. We've seen the rise of Drew McIntyre as a performer, just in his promo ability and taking advantage of the situation that's been given to him. And then when The Rock coming back and the crowd rejecting him and wanting Cody, now we're seeing this awesome heel work from The Rock. I mean, if you want to step back and look at things where it was originally meant to be Cody versus Roman and Seth versus CM Punk, I mean, it's just amazing how things have turned out, really. It's been an amazing past few months.
Yeah, yeah. So, oh, go, no, keep going, sorry.
And look, the women's match, Becky and Rhea, I'm looking forward to seeing what the outcome of this match is, just who's going to win, because, you know, I don't know who's going to win this. I'm not sure if Becky can afford to lose this. If she loses this match, I could see this being the start of her heel turn. If she wants to go down that path, that the fans rejected her and were siding with Mummy, or I could see Becky win this match and then it turning Rhea Ripley babyface. You know what I mean? So either way, I mean, who are you expecting to win that match?
I think Rhea Ripley wins, and I think it leads to a crisis with Becky that we see some sort of a meltdown.
A breakdown,
and that can lead to her still staying babyface or going heel once again. I think that's more like that. I think they believe in Rhea Ripley too much to have her lose on this stage at this point. I'm not ruling out a Becky win. I'm not. I mean, and again, sometimes it has to do with not what's right in that moment the following week, but what do they have planned all the way like through SummerSlam, and if they have a good story arc. You know, we can't fully judge it until, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months goes by. But, yeah, I'm thinking Rhea wins, and then there's something going on with Becky. Because if Becky wins, what you have is a babyface celebrating in the ring with fans booing. And I don't think they want that. And I think that's what we have. Yeah.
I'm getting the gist from you, and I agree with you, that it's not like fans are against Becky. It's just they like Rhea Ripley more. And maybe they're kind of – they're still with Becky, but they're just kind of maybe fatigued off her. But they don't hate her. Well, they're not going against her. I hate the strong word. It's just kind of, you know, we appreciate Becky, everything she's done, but we're more into Rhea. I just think they've been trying to tell a story with Becky over the past several months that, you know, she went back to NXT. She won the championship there. She had these matches with various women there. Then she lost the title. Now she's working her way back up. She overcame Nia Jax. Nia still owns a pinfall over Becky. Becky won the last woman standing match. She hasn't actually pinned Nia, has she? So I'm thinking Nia has it in her back pocket as a potential challenger if Becky was to win the championship. Mm-hmm. So I just think the story, the long-term story that they've been telling with Becky is retribution to win that championship as the impetus for maybe Judgment Day to say to Rhea, you know, you got too good, you got too big for yourself, you're too busy on social media, blah, 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 and that turns her face. Is that the story they're trying to tell? Because they've definitely laid the groundwork for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Or maybe they call an audible, if you like. And this might be an audible. This could have been planned. No, we're building up Becky. We want Rhea to have back-to-back WrestleMania victories against Charlotte and Becky to establish herself as the top star in a division. They could go either way with that. But they've laid the groundwork, I believe, for Becky to have this victory.
Yeah, I mean, I really do think it could go either way. I'm in Rhea even with the case you make, but it's persuasive and there's definitely good options if you do begin. But, you know, Becky's still a bigger star than Rhea Ripley in WWE, but and you know, in the moment, Rhea's getting better reactions. Becky just has a bigger body of work and she's proven. But it feels like a crossroads match, like a tipping point where Rhea can assert herself as bigger than Becky, winning or losing, frankly, but winning. It's an easier, more obvious path. So you can even become a bigger star in losing. We've seen that wrestling before. But Becky also reassert herself. And they've got a great story they're going to tell. And it does give Becky and Rhea, you know, on to something else that's really compelling, but keeps her heel for a while. From a night one, night two construction standpoint, if you've got the A-Rock tag match on night one, you can put one or both of the women's singles matches or, you know, let's say one of the women's singles matches, the title, the women's tag match. You open with either Logan Paul defending as Randy and KO or a tag team ladder match, which my guess opens one of the nights and the other one opens the other. Those both feel like good opening matches. They could also...
I think Logan said on his podcast that his match with KO Randy will be night two. I think he confirmed that.
Okay, so that opens night two, and I could see the ladder opening night one. I don't love that. I like opening matches to be a little bit more ease people in, but I know there's a reasonable and other, you know, argument and for just doing a wild match at the beginning with a ton of action and get people settled in their seats and reacting. But you also have Gunther and Sami Zayn as one of the matches I'm really looking forward to. I love the storyline. I love the build. I love the title being important. And I'm really curious what they do with Sami coming out of this match, win or lose. I expect it'll be a loss, but I don't know that. So you could open up one with that or have that come right before the tag match. So you're saying, okay, we've got a men's single title that's very important that either is right before that tag match or maybe one of the women's matches is in between the two. But if you're looking kind of for a big three or four matches on night one, tag team ladder match, Gunther, Sami, one of the women's singles title matches, and a Rock tag match. And then night two has the two men's world title matches, the other women's singles match, the women's tag, and Logan Paul, Randy, and KO. And, you know, Jimmy and Jay and LA Knight and AJ Styles are you know, supporting grudge matches too, and I think Jimmy and Jay could open night one too, for that matter. But I think when you split it up into two nights and you kind of think about the match order and how the nights kind of balance out, I think it's a very good WrestleMania lineup. In part because that IC title match feels important, women's matches feel right, the six women thing now feels big with Jay Cargill in it. Logan Paul's added star power, on and on. Yeah, I just think kind of talking it through and try to figure out each night's lineup, there's enough depth here for people to feel to get their WrestleMania money's worth both nights that they have.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, Wade, I mean, this is just my opinion. I think you need like three big matches each night. You know, you want one in the middle, one, you know, you don't even, they don't even have to be like beginning, middle, and end, but you want to feel like people are getting their real money's worth. And then everything else is just a bonus, right? And you're right about Sammy and Gunther. I mean, I like the addition of Chad Gable in this storyline, and I like serious Chad Gable. I like the fact that when he's approaching Sammy backstage, he's not wearing his Alpha Academy gear, but he's in a suit, which tells the audience that this is the serious side of me. It's not about shush or yes or whatever the hell, thank you or whatever it is. This is serious. And I like that added wrinkle that they've given to this story. And just Sammy and Chad talking about Gunther puts Gunther over. You know what I mean? I like when wrestlers talk about other wrestlers where they're talking about their strengths because it puts that other wrestler over. I think they've done a great job with adding sort of another dimension to Gunther's character, is that voice, but him as a wrestler, it's just not him physically in the ring. He breaks you down mentally. And I like it suits Sammy's character to want to accept Chad Gable's advice because Sammy has proven himself to be a humble person who isn't afraid to admit he's wrong and who isn't above taking advice. So everything they've done with him has suited his character. So I'm very intrigued to see where they go with that match. I see Gunther winning. I think whoever defeats Gunther, you need to be all in on that person, and I think it has to be somebody who's going to gain something for it. Unless Gunther just relinquishes the title, I can see maybe the way that I see it playing out, Wade, is that I can see Sammy doing what Chad Gable asked of him to do, but it actually doesn't work out, and Chad actually snapping at Sammy. You know, if we had done what I asked you to do, but Sammy would say, "Yeah, I did. But you weren't me." You know what I mean? And then they come to some type of feud. I don't think Sammy's the right person to take the IC title off Gunther. I think it needs to be somebody else. But they're telling that story, that almost Rocky type of story. So I don't know. Maybe he might win. I mean, if he does, I'm not going to be upset. But, man, Gunther has this IC title. Gunther is the IC champion. And the way he comes across, his promos and his smugness and his condescending way and the way they're pulling him over is also getting into your head. I mean, he's doing so well.
So my final topic for you comes from Mandel, from Charlie, who's listening, and goes, what do you see being the finish to the Night 1 tag match between Rock, Reigns, and Cody and Seth? There's been a lot of speculation in other wrestling forums that WWE would go with an overbooked and holds-barred match for Cody versus Reigns. If Bloodline rules is a stipulation, but after the severity of Cody's thing on Monday, I'm considering the better direction is Cody going 2-0 against the Bloodline and Reigns. Jason, where are you on this?
This is a very interesting one. My opinion has changed on this, Wade. So
yeah,
before The Rock got involved, I would have loved to have seen Cody versus Roman in a one-on-one match and Cody wins clean, and that's all you need. However, given the story that they're telling, right, and a lot of people have pointed this out, when Rock was beating up Cody, you clearly saw John Cena's image in the background when he was talking about being the final boss and whatnot. If the Bloodline triumph over Cody and Seth and they stack it against Cody and it is no rules or whatnot, I have no problem with it being an overbooked smosh leading to Cody winning if it means we're going to get some legends involved. Now, normally I would hate that because it takes away from Cody's moment. However, the story that they're telling and the story that Seth has told is that this is bigger than everyone. This is about taking power away from the Bloodline. So if it ends up that Cody needs help from some others to keep the blood, to thwart the Bloodline, to put the Rock in his place, I'm all for what people have talked about. Perhaps we see John Cena. Perhaps we hear the glass break. Whatever. Go in all the fun and leave that lasting image of Cody on the shoulders of a couple of legends, like we saw at the end of WrestleMania 10, where Bret Hart was embraced by, you know, Luger and Macho Man and Razor, all the top baby faces. I'm just trying to follow the story that they're trying to tell. That's the path that I see them going down. And if they go down that path, I have no issue with it. All right? It's just going to be an all-out fun, and, you know, Cody's going to get the victory, and everyone's going to celebrate. Now, if the Bloodline don't win, and Cody and Seth triumph, then obviously we're going to get that one-on-one match, and Cody should win clean. So I don't know, Wade. I think, you know, I'm kind of two ways in it, but because a part of me doesn't want to see an overbooked schmoz with all these people getting involved, and it gets a little bit silly, and, you know, you don't want that for your main event WrestleMania title match.
Yep.
I don't like, in theory, I don't like that, but the story that they're telling and the way it can play out, the way I see it in my head, I kind of see it as being a fun thing to do, and it fits the story, so I'm not upset if it happens.
Yep.
You know what, if I have a preference, it'd be Cody winning clean, so I kind of could go two ways on it. I mean, what do you think?
I'm going through the same thing you are. I ultimately think they can tell an effective story either way. I mean, I'm punting on it in the sense that I don't think one is by definition inevitably or even very likely to be better than the other. They'll just be different, and some people are going to have their preference. I think Cody and Roman can have a really good one-on-one match without a lot of shenanigans, but the shenanigans have been part of Roman's formula, and this would make it legal. And I'm sure there's lots of stories that can tell with bloodline rules and different things. Like you said, different people can get involved on both sides. So, I mean, the purist in me wants to just see a match with no shenanigans and have Cody win in a more traditional one-on-one match. But we are missing out on another way to tell the story and forward and plant seeds for other stories to go the other way. So, either way, I feel like I'm missing out on something, and either way, it's still going to be good. You know what I mean? So, I've got strong opinions on some things, but in this case, from the beginning, I haven't had a super strong preference, even if I'm on 60-40 one way and, 40-60 a week later based on, little hints and interactions with wrestlers.
I mean, so many people have pointed to this. When The Rock is beating up Cody and you see the truck in the background, John Cena's face is prevalent, as is Stone Cold's. I mean, I don't know if, you know what I mean? Like, are they dropping these things on purpose? I mean, are they setting people up for disappointment if they don't show up? I mean, the crowd would go ballistic if those two got involved. I mean, the two biggest baby faces of the modern era coming out to say, the next big baby face that WWE hope to have, to thwart The Rock, to thwart Roman, it's bigger than everything. I mean, fans would absolutely love it. You know what I mean? Would it take away from Cody's victory? No, because he needs help to overcome these insurmountable odds that have been put against him, and perhaps in an unfair way. So, I could definitely be okay with it. And it would be a fun image. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I will sneak in one more email for you here. And this is Joe W. From Instagram, from Michigan. He goes, I understand this is not the normal kind of question, but I got caught up with this episode of SmackDown, and I'll start by saying I'm hyped by this year's WrestleMania. What I'm not hyped about is it's still like they seem to separate factions by race or ethnicity. I used to think that was just a Vince methodology, but it seems to be WWE's under Paul Levesque. I don't understand why some factions seem to be segregated. Is it something that I'm overthinking, or is it something that you guys think could do better or ought to change? I mean, Lashley and Street Profits, LWO, Legado del Fantasma, AOP and Cross. What do you think about that? And I don't know, does Judgment Day count in that regard in a way? What do you think about that topic, Jason?
It's something that I've noticed, but I haven't really, put too much thought into it.
Yeah.
Part of me feels like it's, lazy might be the too harsh of a word, but, we just put people of a certain ethnic background together, it's not, I don't think there's any sinister motives behind it. It's just, they just feel like these people might have their chemistry with each other or on-screen chemistry or, you know what I mean, Wade? I think I would like to see more of a mix. You've got Dakota Kai, with Curry and Asuka and also Io. So and you had Bayley as well, for a brief period of time. So I guess, part of me would like to see more of a mix, I guess, as far as ethnic backgrounds is concerned. I feel like it's not something that I overly think about. I notice it, but I don't think there's any, sinister motives behind it all. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't think it's sinister or egregious, but I think it's something to be cognizant of and, mix it up sometimes just to avoid making it sort of seem like, we think all these people who speak this way or look this way or come from this background all hang out together and you lean into that a little bit too hard. But, I don't think it's sinister. I think it's something that there should be a level of self-awareness about, and they don't. They don't like without thinking about it, go too far down that road where it starts to jump out.
Yeah. Sinister is too strong of a word. It's not sinister. It's just, I don't know. I feel like it's just maybe there's just a comfort zone of just presenting certain people that look alike in a certain way. I'm just going to put them as a group. And maybe they just feel like the on-screen chemistry is better that way. But I'd like to see them mix it up a little bit. Yeah.
You're looking forward. We saw plugs for both tonight. You look forward to WWE Next Gen or more than WWE Speed. Which one, if either, are you looking forward to?
I'm not sure if I'm going to watch either, but I reckon Next Gen, probably. I mean, I'm a fan of shorter matches, though, so I like that. just as an idea. Next Gen, that look okay to me. I mean, we could have a lever, to be honest with you.
The WWE Speed thing is kind of like when there's the Beat the Clock Challenge, where there's an incentive to take chances to win quickly. It's a little bit different spin framing of it, but you do end up seeing, and the commentators are key in getting the Beat the Clock Challenge over, which, yeah, she might not have done that if she wasn't worried about trying to set a low time. It's like when you pull the goaltender at the end of an NHL game, your likelihood of being scored on is greater than scoring, but you're not going to win unless you score. So you want to increase the odds of scoring, even if you increase greater risk it backfires. And that's what the Speed presumably will be like, just like Beat the Clock Challenge. So there's some logic to it. I'm curious how they execute it. Next Gen just feels like a modern, tough enough. And those are fascinating, and it's been a while. So I'm looking forward to both. Probably Next Gen better, more so. But I'm curious about Speed. I don't know if I'm going to be watching every moment of it. I don't know the ultimate format and how long they plan to do it, or if it's just kind of an experiment like the Dream Team mixed tech thing they did on Facebook Live for a while, or on what that Facebook spin-off was. So we'll see. Jason, anything else from tonight's panel or WWE that you want to bring up to close with?
I just thought that Cody's promo on Monday was really good, and I know some people might have some criticisms in relation to him mentioning sort of like the extra work that he does, you know, like sort of patting himself on the back. I like the way he covered that by saying that, you know, the reason I do this is because our champion isn't here. So, and people like that line. So that worked in a storyline point of view and also in a real point of view, in the sense that I think fans have accepted that if you're the WWE champion, you have certain responsibilities that extend beyond the ring, and they see that Cody is willing to do that. So I think he covered his base there. I just overall like the promo that he gave, and I think he's in a really, really strong position as a babyface. I think, you know, I was critical of him last week coming up against Roman. I thought that Roman came across a little bit more natural than him. I thought he had more of a natural type of tone to him. And I've come to accept that this is just how Cody is. And, you know, for some people, he might come across a little bit scripted or rehearsed, his delivery, what he says. But he's actually like this in real life. So I think his selling of the beatdown was really well. I think The Rock, we need to see that brutal edge to him. The fact that he's using, you know, white weightlifting belt and spreading red blood over it. Cody's on here. I think the visual of it. It's just when I look at the feedback on social media, there were so many people who were glowing about that episode of Raw. The final segment with Rhea and Becky, and the segment with Drew, Seth and CM Punk, which just seemed to be like an all-in, pardon the pun, but everyone was just like trying to get all their shots in. It's almost like they had a general outline of where they were going, but everyone was trying to get their shots in, and some people stepped on each other's toes and whatnot, but it just came across natural and real, and everyone stuck to the essence of their character. So a great episode of Raw. I thought a solid episode of SmackDown, and really looking forward to WrestleMania. And I think this is going to be one of the most anticipated WrestleManias in a long time. And like I said, Wade, I mean, you just look at it. I mean, it was scheduled to be CM Punk versus Seth Rollins and Cody versus Roman. With Punk's injury, The Rock inserting himself, them being spooked by the fans, now sort of fans are loving his role as a heel. It's just very interesting what's happened over the past few months. But as a long-term fan, I'm along for the ride, and I'm excited, and that's all I can ask of me. And that's all I can ask of them.
Jason, thanks so much. Always great to be on the show, and I always enjoy talking WWE with you.
Not a problem. Thanks, Wade. Thanks, listeners.
Yes. Thanks, all of you, and we'll talk to you next time.